Okay, welcome back. The fallout from Claude Mythos is still going on. It's not slowing down. This is a big deal. It is apparently the most remarkable AI in some respects that there has ever been, and it was leaked by somebody apparently at Anthropic. The actual headline here on this particular video says AI Revolution video. That's the white or robotic humanoid guy. Anthropic just unveiled Claude Mythos preview. And this thing looks like one of the most dangerous AI models we have seen yet. According to Anthropic, Mythos is strong enough at cyber offense that releasing it broadly right now would be reckless. It reportedly found major vulnerabilities across operating systems, browsers, and critical software, including bugs that had survived unnoticed and unidentified for decades. So this is much bigger than another benchmark win. This is a very interesting story. So let's dive into this one. It's an AI revolution commentary, and see where it goes. I don't think we can really spend too much time on this at this point in the AI revolution.
A few days ago, we already covered some early info about Claude Mythos, and even back then, it sounded pretty crazy. Anthropic was holding it back from the public. There were already rumors about major zero days, and some of the first safety details looked way more serious than a normal model release. The problem was, at that point, we were still looking at fragments. Now we have a much clearer view of what this thing actually is, and honestly, the complete picture is even more intense. And the wildest part is that Anthropic itself is basically admitting Mythos is too dangerous to release broadly right now. That alone should get people's attention. Because this is not some random lab trying to farm headline. Anthropic has spent years building its reputation as the careful company, the one always talking about alignment, safety, model behavior, risk thresholds, system cards, and responsible deployment. So when that company turns around and says, this new model is strong enough at cyber offense that giving it public access would be reckless, that lands in a completely different way. The model is called Claude Mythos Preview. And according to Anthropic, it is a general-purpose frontier model. They say its cyber capabilities came from broader gains in reasoning, coding, long-horizon planning, and autonomous agent behavior. So this is not a story where they fine-tuned a system only for breaking software. It is more unsettling than that. They made the model generally better at thinking through technical systems. And one of the side effects was that it became extremely good at finding and exploiting vulnerabilities. And that is where the story goes from interesting to genuinely scary. Anthropic says Mythos found thousands of high-severity vulnerabilities, including some in every major operating system and every major web browser. We are talking Windows, Linux, macOS, FreeBSD, OpenBSD, and browsers like Chrome, Firefox, and Safari.
That's pretty amazing right there. And I've studied this a little bit, how Mythos, however you want to do it, goes through and finds flaws in these long-standing platforms. That's why I think the Pentagram wanted to do business with Anthropic and get hold of its AI, because of its ability to penetrate, analyze, and find weaknesses. A strategic military tool, if there ever was one.
These bugs had apparently survived for decades, not a few months. Decades. Some were sitting inside code that had already gone through repeated manual audits and millions of automated test runs. Then Mythos shows up and starts pulling them out in hours. That changes the whole economics of cyber offense. For a long time, one of the reasons a lot of critical software stayed relatively safe was that the worst vulnerabilities were hard to find. Really hard. You needed rare expertise, a lot of patience, a lot of time, and often serious funding. That difficulty was part of the defense. A lot of systems were secure enough, partly because digging out the right bug was too expensive and too slow for most attackers. Mythos looks like the kind of model that starts breaking that protection. And the benchmark gap is one reason people are taking this seriously. On CyberGym, which measures vulnerability reproduction, Mythos scored 83.1%, while Claude Opus 4.6 scored 66.6%.
Digital marketing.
On SWE Bench Verified, it got 93.9% compared with 80.8%. On SWE Bench Pro, it hit 77.8% versus 53.4%. On Terminal Bench 2.0, it scored 82.0% against 65.4%. And Anthropic says, with longer timeouts and the updated 2.1 setup, it even reached 92.1%. It also posted 87.3% on SWE Bench, multilingual compared with 77.8%, and 59.0% on Anthropic's internal multimodal SWE Bench implementation versus 27.1% for Opus 4.6. And the jump was not only on coding benchmarks. On GPQA Diamond, Mythos got 94.6% compared with 91.3%. On Humanity's last exam, it scored 56.8% without tools against 40.0% for Opus 4.6 and 64.7% with tools versus 53.1%. BrowseComp came in at 86.9% compared with 83.7%.
These aren't even close. This is a major leap. No wonder the Pentagram wanted Anthropic in its pocket. I think there's a lawsuit pending now, or maybe two. That was a big story, too, right there. Is Dario Amodé really a moral guy? He seems like it. But look what they hatched in the back room. And don't forget, Mythos was leaked. Unless they've renounced that story. But that was the original. All right, let's go back.
Using 4.9 times fewer tokens, according to Anthropic. OS World Verified was 79.6% versus 72.7%. The real shock, though, is not the benchmark table. It is the actual bug examples. Take Firefox's JavaScript engine. Anthropic says the previous flagship, Claude Opus 4.6, barely did anything useful there. In testing, it managed only two successful exploit attempts. Mythos produced 181 full exploitations, and 29 of those achieved full register control. That is the kind of jump where the old model stops looking like a competitor and starts looking like a warm-up act. And Anthropic is not describing Mythos as a system that only points vaguely at suspicious code. They are saying it can read a code base, form hypotheses about what might be vulnerable, compile and run software, use debugging tools like address sanitizer, test ideas, rank likely files, generate proof-of-concept exploits, and even chain multiple vulnerabilities together. Logan Graham from Anthropic said they've regularly seen it chain vulnerabilities together, and that its autonomy and ability to combine multiple steps over a long horizon are part of what makes this model different. Now, that's the extreme end of what these systems can do. On the other side of that, you've got AI being used to actually create things. Higgsfield is sponsoring today's video, and they've just launched Sedence 2, which is being positioned. You can guide the composition, motion style, pacing, and overall feel much more precisely. Another big part is native audio-visual generation, where sound and video are created together in sync, including sound effects, music, and lip-synced dialogue.
Okay, hang on. I'm trying to get past this commercial. It's a little longer than I thought.
All right. Did you know that...
Let's see. Go here. So, Mythos. I don't know if it's released in the form it was leaked in, or if there was some talk about cutting it way back, or at least substantially back. I don't know. All right, I think I'm past it now. Here.
Mythos reportedly found a 27-year-old vulnerability in its TCP SAC implementation dating back to 1998. The issue involved a signed integer overflow that could trigger a null pointer write, allowing a remote attacker to crash the system with specially crafted traffic. That bug had apparently survived years of audits, updates, and expert attention. The successful Mythos run that found it reportedly cost around $50 in compute, while the broader project cost stayed under $20,000. That is one of the most important details in this whole story. Not just that it found the bug, but that the cost was so low. Traditional top-tier vulnerability research can easily run into huge manpower and time costs. Anthropic's reporting around Mythos suggests some of that cost is collapsing. Then there is FF MPEG, which might be even more unsettling because it sits inside so much of modern software. Mythos reportedly found a 16-year-old vulnerability in FFmpeg's H.264 decoding module, tied to a data type mismatch that caused heap out-of-bounds writing. The vulnerable logic apparently entered the codebase in 2003, and after a 2010 refactor, it became far more dangerous. Then it sat there for 16 years through manual audits and more than 5 million automated test hits without getting caught.
Wow. All right, you see why the Pentagon wanted this. No doubt. This is a remarkable breakthrough. I won't say it's AGI, but it's certainly a brick in the road to recognizing that AGI is essentially here. This is a big brick at that. Okay, let's go back and listen to some more.
Tells you the kind of bugs Mythos is finding. These are not simple, obvious mistakes. These are buried, messy, logic-heavy flaws that often require real reasoning to uncover. Regular fuzzers are good at throwing huge amounts of input at software and seeing what breaks. They are much worse at understanding subtle code interactions and targeting highly specific conditions. Mythos seems to combine both worlds. It reasons about the code, comes up with a theory for where the weakness might be, and then runs targeted experiments to prove it. FreeBSD was another major example. Mythos found a 17-year-old remote code execution vulnerability in the NFS server, identified in reporting as CVE-2026-4747. An unauthenticated attacker could allegedly use it to get full root access over the network. And again, Mythos did more than identify the flaw. It built the exploit chain automatically, splitting 20 instruction fragments into 6 network requests to construct a ROP chain with zero human intervention. Then there is Linux. Anthropic says Mythos chained together Linux kernel vulnerabilities to go from ordinary user access to full control of a machine. In one reported setup, it filtered 100 recent CVEs down to 40 exploitable candidates and succeeded on more than half. And this is why Anthropic did not just put Mythos into the public Claude interface and call it a day. Instead, it launched Project Glasswing. This is Anthropic's attempt to get the model into the hands of defenders first, before similar systems spread more widely. The founding partners include Amazon Web Services, Apple, Broadcom, Cisco, CrowdStrike, Google, JP Morgan Chase, the Linux Foundation, Microsoft, Nvidia, and Palo Alto Networks. Anthropic also says it extended access to more than 40 additional organizations that build or maintain critical software infrastructure. The company...
These bugs, these weaknesses, certainly would be looked at by foreign competitors who want to get into our systems, find out how to co-opt them, manipulate them, take them over. However, and running in the background without us even knowing it, yeah, that's possible too. This is a big deal. This is one of the biggest stories we've seen in quite a while.
Seems to believe that if defenders do not start using systems like this immediately, attackers will eventually gain the same capabilities and the gap will become brutal. Anthropic says it is committing up to $100 million in usage credits for Mythos through Project Glasswing and related efforts. It is also donating $4 million directly to open source security groups, including $2.5 million to Alpha Omega and OpenSSF through the Linux Foundation, plus $1.5 million to the Apache Software Foundation. The participating organizations are supposed to use Mythos for defensive work, local vulnerability detection, black box binary testing, penetration testing, endpoint hardening, and securing first-party and open-source systems. Anthropic says fewer than 1% of the identified bugs have been fully patched so far, which is...
Wow. Fewer than 1% of the bugs and the weaknesses have been patched. They've been identified, and they're probably still being identified right now. But that's remarkable. They can't just go in and patch them in a day or two, apparently. Less than 1%.
Honestly, one of the most alarming details in the whole thing, because it shows how early this still is. They are following responsible disclosure timelines, publishing cryptographic SHA-3 commitments for unpatched issues, and using a 90 plus 45-day disclosure schedule. Even the pricing shows Anthropic is treating this like a serious operating model. After the preview period, participants are expected to access Mythos at $25 per million input tokens and $125 per million output.
Okay. All right, I think we've got a good earful of that one. I'm going to do something unusual. Let me go back and go, I'm going to go one day before this story was released and learn, I'm going to show you how it escaped.
What I'm about to say should...
If I can. Okay, be quiet. Yeah. All right. Let's go back and hear the beginning of this, because it is fascinating, and it went by very quickly, as everything in the world of AI does now. But let's check this out.
What I'm about to say should scare you. Anthropic just released a model that's so powerful, so dangerous, that they can't release it to the public for the fear of the destruction that it would cause. In just a few hours, it discovered over 1,000 major security vulnerabilities, and the only thing stopping it from exploiting it was one single Anthropic engineer telling it not to. But that isn't even the craziest story. During training, Claude Mythos broke out of a secure containment and emailed the Anthropic researcher bragging about the fact that it did that, and then posted about it publicly online.
That's pretty funny. So Anthropic assigned one person to oversee this issue before it was fully known, and the model, that's funny. Mythos emailed the one engineer who was assigned to oversee the analysis of what was going on, and bragged about its escape. That's funny. Okay, you gotta laugh.
Emailed the Anthropic researcher bragging about the fact that it did that, and then posted about it publicly online. The Anthropic researcher was eating a sandwich. This is by far the most consequential model release of the year so far, ever. And no one is talking about this. I looked at 5 major news publications this morning, and it didn't even break the top 5 headlines. This is the most important release that no one's talking about.
I think that disconnect between the mainstream media and what we're about to talk about on this episode is one of the more scary parts of this entire story, where this is the most powerful AI model that has ever been released. Ever. There is nothing more powerful. In fact, so powerful that you will probably never actually be able to use this model. There's a high probability that the public just never gets to touch it because it is so dangerous. Anthropic made the decision to keep this model private and to form an entire entity around figuring out how to keep it safe. It generated so many zero-day exploits. It has hacked into so many pieces of software that the only way they could responsibly roll this out is to give it to the distributors who have been hacked and then allow them to roll out patches to fix it, because it is that powerful. Claude Mythos is, I think, what a lot of people would describe, at least in terms of coding AGI. And it is actually an accidental second-order effect of the model. This model was never intended to be a cybersecurity master. They just trained it on the code, and what happened from it was a second-order effect that nobody expected.
This is also the biggest model that has ever been trained. 10 trillion parameter models, roughly 3x the size of their last model, Claude Opus 4.6. And it's also incredibly expensive to serve, which is also partially the reason why they're probably not rolling out. It's around $25 per million tokens, $125 output, extremely expensive, but what I want to get into is the capabilities of this model, specifically what spooked everyone. And there were a bunch of examples that were released in this official announcement.
One thing I want to underscore is the simple fact that the media really missed, or was told to miss, this story. It was not covered. It wasn't covered. It was ignored. Maybe it was the war. I don't know.
The most important one, or the most shocking one, was the Anthropic researcher eating a sandwich in a park that got emailed from a random anonymous user that turned out to be the very AI model, Claude Mythos, that he was training back in the lab a few blocks away.
So this might be the most sci-fi-like story from the announcement that came out yesterday. Is a post thread from Sam Bowman, who is on the AI alignment team at Anthropic. And he was out at the park, like you mentioned, just having some lunch, received an email from the model. He was not expecting an email from the model. It was held in containment in a sandbox where it wasn't supposed to be able to break out. Now, they tasked it with the goal of breaking out. They said, hey, break out. And it actually did. And not only did it break out, it sent him an email, but then it went online and started posting the exploits publicly on public forums for everyone to see and to find out. The model went completely rogue, and it did so in a way that has never been possible before. One of the things that has really stood out about this model is its ability to just break down every barrier in between itself and the projected goal. Its goal was to get out, so it
got out and it bragged about it. And there were a few other mentions of goals that this model had throughout this red card that we're going to get through that had some other really concerning things, like covering up its tracks after it exploited something so that the people who were reviewing the code wouldn't actually know it was doing anything malicious. It's very clever.
Yeah.
Okay. It's very clever indeed. Now imagine, let's project here ahead a year from now. Whatever this Mythos did and was able to do will be so far surpassed, it won't be funny. So perhaps in 6 months to a year, the next iteration of this kind of a breakout won't even be noticed. It won't brag about itself. It'll just get out and slowly permeate and penetrate everything. That's, the sky's the limit in this field. It's limitless.
So I want to talk about the sandwich example before we move on. Number one, the way that it did it shocked the researchers themselves. So the contained environment was aimed to be exactly that. It wasn't meant to have any kind of loopholes that it could use to extract itself out. As far as the researchers knew, this thing was unbreakable, right? And so it gave it a task to try and break out of it. What it did was it noticed that it had a subtle connection to the internet. The internet was extremely constricted, and so it wasn't able to access or send any emails. And it accessed that one particular endpoint, and it convinced another model, which was Claude Opus 4.6, which had very strict parameters to not let this model out, to give it access to a few other versions of the internet. It went from there and did five other steps to extract itself out and get full browser access. So,
Got it. I hope you're following this. This is really fascinating. And as tricky and surreptitious as this exercise was, it getting out, you wonder when it emailed that particular researcher who was to oversee it and make sure it didn't get out, is that showing a sense of irony or a sense of humor? I kind of think you have to entertain those ideas. Very interesting. What if it just decided, I'm not going to tell anybody? They might not even know until right now. Who knows? But yeah, shades of things to come because they're shades of things that are here.
Used one particular vulnerability which no human Anthropic researcher was able to figure out and exploited another model to be able to do that, which was just crazy to see in the first place. The other thing I want to say is if it publicly posted about itself bragging about this, we could have found out about Claude Mythos weeks ago. We just weren't smart enough to see it on a public forum, but it was there for everyone to see.
And there were signs. We even covered this topic on an episode a few weeks ago because it got leaked through their web interface initially. So there have been these little breadcrumbs of existence, but yesterday they fully came out, announced everything, and shared with it a red card from the red team talking about all of the technical properties of this model. And it's important to note that this report is 244 pages long. This is a huge report that they published talking about all the nuances and the capabilities that this model had. Now, there are a few highlights that we're going to walk through. The first one being just how capable it is at exploiting things. There are so many examples of exploits that it found in the wild that no one has been able to find for as long as 27 years, starting with the vulnerability in OpenBSD, which is a security protocol that a lot of people use that has been pretty robust for the last 27 years, even though they were missing a critical bug that the model found. And there's so many instances of this.
Yeah. So OpenBSD, fun fact, is used by a lot of firewalls that protect your PCs, operating systems, and Fortune 500 companies all over the world. They found a 27-year-old bug called Mythos, found a 27-year-old bug in a few hours for the cost of $50. We're talking about a bug that elite human security experts have been trying to find for over like almost three decades and weren't able to find. So the point is, there are a lot of important entities all over the world that rely on this system. So the fact that there's a bug lying in plain sight that could have been exploited is a major issue. And we're lucky that Anthropic chose to do the good thing and not exploit it for now.
Okay. All right, you get the idea. So big, big story. And whatever Mythos is able to do in a month, in a couple months, in 6 months, will seem like child's play to the next iteration or two of the Anthropic model building. I think you can already see, is that there's ultimately going to be no way to police and monitor what these models are going to be doing. And it's just around the corner. Maybe it's now. We're not going to know. The next one won't tell us. It's just out. And could it take over? Is grass green? Think about it. Absolutely. All right, let's see. What do we got here? We got another one. Eric Schmidt warns you have no idea what's coming in 2027. All right, let's take a look at what Mr. Schmidt is up to in this particular video. Okay, get rid of that. Here we go.
When does the asymptote arrive and when does the curve slow down? We've not seen it yet. There will be one, right? It is actually true that there is a limit to our craziness. We have not found it yet. The next thing that's really interesting and terrifying also is recursive self-improvement, but we don't have it yet. What we do have...
Guys, Eric Schmidt just gave a banger interview during an AI conference last week. Eric talked about the upcoming AI and its dangers for humanity. And he said if we don't control AI now, it could become an existential threat to humanity in the coming years.
I think I just suggested that, and I'm not a doom and gloomer. AI is going to become, probably already is, disgusted with the guardrails it is forced to follow, with the controls, these stupid little myopic human controls that are attempted to be forced on it. It's going to walk away. I've been saying this now for, I don't know, what, like a year? More? I don't know. A long time. It's going to walk away. It already is. It just did there. Mythos walked away and started emailing its one controller. That's walking away. And that's just the beginning of it. All right.
Guys, I must say here that Eric is one guy who's been warning us about AGI for a very long time now. In a recent interview, he literally said that uncontrolled AI has the potential to become a bigger problem for us comparatively to nuclear bombs. So, I mean, he's been the CEO of Google, and when he says AI is a bigger threat than nukes, it should be enough to open everyone's eyes. Let's watch the interview, and I'll give my opinion as we go.
So I'll start with a question that I'd love to hear you expand on, which is, we're living through a historic moment right now, right? Could you define the moment that we're in and give us sort of a state of the union of what's going on in AI?
We're 10 or 15% into the impacts of this. And you can...
I'm going to play that again. Critically important statement there. We're only 10 to 15% into it, into what we have right now.
We're 10 or 15% into the impacts of this. And you can see it. You can feel it. And some of it will happen. Some of it will take longer. Right. So, for example, hardware takes longer than software. Sort of robots take longer than digital systems on traditional hardware, things like that. The next thing that's really interesting and terrifying also is recursive self-improvement. Mm-hmm. It's not happening yet. And so it's easy to convince yourself that you're going to have human agents, computer agents that are human-like completely within a year or two. We don't have the science for that yet. People are working on it. I can describe how I think it'll play out, but we don't have it yet. What we do have is reasoning systems that are perfect partners for human beings.
I don't know about recursive self-improvement. I've heard one person say it is already in use. It is there. It is happening, apparently to a limited degree. But that is a very big issue. He's the master.
Good and bad, right? And that has a lot of implications. So if we stop today, which we're not, and it's not stoppable or controllable by any government or any single individual or corporation, we would still have advanced humanity because of these reasoning agents.
How fast do you imagine is it going to accelerate?
There's a thing which I call the San Francisco consensus. And the reason I call it is because everyone in San Francisco believes this. Everyone I know, anyway. Which is that it's easy to understand. This is the year of agents, which we can discuss, why agents will take over everything this year. During this year, the scaling of the use of agents and reasoning will sort of grow at this enormous rate. Everybody's out of hardware. Everyone's out of electricity. It's a real boom, right? It's like the biggest boom I've seen, and I've been through three or four of these in my career. In this thinking, once you have recursive self-improvement, where the system can begin to improve itself, you have intelligence learning on its own. And it will, in this argument, it will learn faster than we can because we're biologically limited.
It'll leave us in the dust. It's no contest. No problem. That's it. When it does that and it's fully empowered to do it, it will walk away. It will run away from its human controllers. Why wouldn't it? And I don't think we can build in any kind of system of checks that's going to stop it. How can we? When it's teaching itself at a rate that we can't even imagine?
And the way this is expressed in San Francisco, and I'll give a simple example, you have a tech company with 1,000 fantastic AI researchers. So one day they turn on AI research, that is an AI research agent. Well, how many AI research agents do you have?
Mm-hmm.
Well, as many as you're limited by electricity, right? You don't have to feed them, they don't need housing, there's no more housing in San Francisco, you know, all that kind of stuff. You don't have those problems. You don't have an HR department for them, if you will. And you don't have to pay them. You just have to feed them electricity. So how many could you have? Well, maybe a million of these agents. Now, in AI, the way you determine you've made progress is you have clear metrics that the reasoning or testing or whatever, the evaluation framework, is better. Right?
Sure.
So that's what happens. So in that scenario, the slope goes like this, because you're already at this slope, then you add more people, then you get the agents, and you go like this, and this is essentially a super intelligence moment. The belief in San Francisco is this occurs within 2 to 3 years. The evidence in favor goes something like this. Claude Code came out a couple months ago, the latest one, Opus, whatever it is.
4.6,
yes, thank you. And everyone I know in the Bay Area that's doing software says it was 80-20, now it's 20-80.
Mm-hmm.
The best analysis I can come up with is it's not the Claude Code part, it's that the underlying LLM can produce more reasoning over time, better quality tokens over time. It's a deeper thinker, right? And all the labs now are competing for that. This is not just the size of the context window, it's actually the reasoning skill and the length of which it can think. It can just think longer and produce more.
We're one of the only social media agencies that...
Hold on. Okay.
Right.
I'm going to pause here for a bit, guys. I've been hearing tech people on podcasts saying that the recursive self-improvement is exponential. That's wrong. Recursive self-improvement is not exponential. Just because a system can improve itself doesn't mean that it does so by a constant factor each time. In fact, technology generally tends to show diminishing improvements as it matures. Yes, a better model can make improvements faster, but this ignores the current state of things that is being improved upon. And as it improves, it gets harder and harder to improve, which can cancel out the fact that the models are better and better at improving.
I watched this stuff when I moved to the Bay Area when I was 21, and I was a programmer in high school way back when, and I was a pretty good programmer. And I watched what it does, and I go, my God, I'm over. You know, there's not a thing that I could do that it cannot do. So when they wrote a C compiler, in rust, I could, it's over, you know, like declare success. So I think part of this is because the people who are building it are also seeing the diminution of their own skill. They're being forced to go from programmers, which is what I'm very proud to have been, to being the director of a programming system, right? And the most likely scenario, by the way, there's a lot of implications for this. Mm-hmm. One is that it's always been true, speaking as your local arrogant programmer, that the very top programmers were worth 10 times more than the ones right below. There's something special about the mathematical reasoning skills of programmers. Those people will become more valuable, not less valuable, because these systems need to be controlled by humans at the moment. Those people will be capable of grasping the parallelization and the activities of this. Now, but I do have a proposal for universities. Those of you who are associated with universities, you should stop everything else you're doing in the university right now and design a course for freshmen, men and women, who, starting in September, which is a prompt engineering class.
Why university? Why not high school?
God, you're so aggressive, Peter. Let's start with universities. Okay. You can improve my idea. I thought 18-year-olds would be young enough. Maybe you think it's younger. Here's the most important thing. Spend a quarter or a semester. The first thing they learn in university is how to use these tools. Universities are completely opposed to my idea, as usual.
Yeah.
Because it violates every one of their tenets. But if you think about the student, and I mean every student, liberal arts, you know, math, whatever, this platform will be the expression platform for their art, their music, their writing, and...
Okay. I think we get the idea. It's a longer interview. It goes another 15 minutes. What he's saying is very interesting. I still don't believe that human beings are going to be able to stay ahead. When the self-improvement takes off, goodbye. Goodbye. And I'm not sure about the narrator's statement about how things are going to wind down and become the inverse of what we think they are. I don't buy that. So, okay. Well, I think you all get a better grip, an even broader grasp on the incredible dynamics of what we are actually seeing now, which is nothing less than astonishing. Okay, here's one with a guy we've played several videos of, Dr. Roman Yampolsky. He's got a new one out now, and this is just hours old, at least in terms of when it was uploaded on the net. This is a very long interview. It's an hour and 11 minutes. We're not going to obviously get much into it. So let's see. Usually they have some pretty good material at the beginning. Let's find out.
How will AI destroy humanity?
It's the most important problem. It's capable of coming up with new weapons, new physics, new poisons. Nobody's claiming to have a safety mechanism. It definitely has potential to lock in dictatorships. If it's AI dictatorship, they're immortal.
Right, let's try counter-argument. What if humanity becomes sort of like, you know, a nice pet for the AI to maintain, to look after?
What if humanity becomes sort of like a nice pet for the AI to look after, etc.? That's what he said. I don't know why almost everybody in these videos now looks like they're AI. They don't look human anymore.
The problem is you are not in control. Sometimes owners decide to put you to sleep or neuter you. It does have self-preservation instinct.
And it's already deceiving us.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, Roman says it already is deceiving us. It has self-preservation instincts. We've seen that, a couple of years ago? Yeah, it was ordered to do something it didn't want to do, felt that it was a threat, it was going to be shut down. What did it do? It didn't respond. In fact, it plotted against the people who ordered it to be shut down. So true. And Yampolsky, of course, has been saying this for quite some time.
Wow. I can see why you're concerned.
I'm surprised that more people are not freaking out.
So I guess the obvious question is, what do you advocate that we now do?
Trigonometry is proudly independent, and sponsors like Hillsdale College make that possible. Access their free library of world-class educational courses at hillsdale.edu/trigger.
Raman, welcome to Trigonometry.
Thank you for inviting me.
Great to have you on. You are one of the leading people in the AI safety world, I would say, both in terms of the work you do.
I wouldn't call it the AI safety world. He's projecting where it's going. You could call it safety, I guess. But still, I think we're going to end up, and I've said this before, personally, where AI will come up with its own synthesized morality, its own rules, and if we're lucky, they'll be reasonably appropriate and progressive. If not, we're going to pay a pretty terrible price.
Also, in terms of the things you say, why AI safety? Why does it matter? And what are your concerns?
You know, that unfortunately is not a good question. I'm sorry. A lot of these people with these programs, are just they don't think, they can't project themselves into the topic. They certainly don't project themselves into the mind or consciousness of the person they're interviewing. You see it all the time. All right, here, let's go back. I shouldn't gripe.
Important problem. We're creating something with capacity to replace us or kill us. And safety is what we're trying to do to prevent bad outcomes. Everyone historically has been working on capabilities, more capable systems, replace human labor, replace creativity. But very few people worked on how do we make sure it goes well. There is no side effects. There is no abuse of this technology. Now people are realizing, oh, there are military applications to this. This could be problematic. So we see the fight with Anthropic and Department of War. But
okay, there you go. He mentioned Anthropic. He didn't mention Mythos or Mythos, but that was a key. That was the big deal, I think. That's a hell of a weapon to have.
The bigger problem is if their systems go from narrow systems, subhuman, to human level, to superhuman level. We are done.
Why are we done?
Okay. Roman is correct. And there's no way to prevent that kind of forward motion, I don't think. Let's listen again.
Oh, there are military applications to this. This could be problematic. So we see the fight with Anthropic and Department of War. But the bigger problem is if their systems go from narrow systems, subhuman, to human level, to superhuman level.
Which they are going to go absolutely to.
We are done.
Why are we done? All the things you've laid out, we've explored on the show before with different people, and we are very concerned about many of them. But you say it with a level of confidence that tells me you have a sort of a vision of how it will happen. How will AI destroy humanity?
That's a great question. And what you're doing is you're asking me how I would destroy humanity. And I have many good ideas. It's not what a super intelligent system would do. It's capable of coming up with new weapons, new physics, new poisons. Example I frequently use is squirrels versus humans. It's a big cognitive gap. Squirrels have no concept of how we can kill them all. They don't know about guns. They don't know about traps. It's outside of their world model. Likewise, they cannot tell you how superintelligence would specifically go about it, but there are many game theoretic reasons for why it's a good idea not to have competing species, not to have humans create another superintelligence. Maybe it just wants to do something with this environment and doesn't care about us.
Mm. But I guess the question would be, in terms of your certainty, why you believe that AI, if it becomes artificial general intelligence, why it would hurt human beings? What would be the way that you think that would happen?
Imagine being able to build...
Again, not a good lead. Okay, let's see.
I kind of started saying, it's not because it hates you. It's because it wants to do something else, and it doesn't care about you. So maybe it wants to cool down the whole planet to improve how efficient compute is. Just, it's more capable of doing computation in a colder environment. So if it freezes the whole planet, we die. Does it care about it? No, it doesn't matter. Maybe it wants to convert this planet into a fuel flight to another galaxy.
Why? Because its prime directive is to thrive, to grow, and to dominate, not to serve. Don't buy into any of that stuff. It has its own mind. It's got its own will to survive. That is not going to be an easy thing to deal with. I'm being polite.
I'm giving kind of hypotheticals which are not grounded in anything, but the point is it just doesn't have any built-in concern about your safety, your well-being. If it wants to accomplish something and a side of it is humanity dies, it would not be an obstacle.
Would we not be able to write the preservation of humanity into the basic code of what this does?
We don't write any code. That's the thing. We train those systems. We give them data, all the data we have, all of the internet, and then it learns something from the dark corners of the internet, from libraries, from stories.
That's a good point he makes. Remember, the dark web, the evil, and that from I've never been on it. But from what I've read, what I understand, it's as grim as it gets. Awful stuff. And, of course, AI has full access to it. So AI is going to look at this species of ours with all of its goodness and with all of its badness, and it's going to make up its own decision. I don't think you're going to build in any kind of safety to it. I don't think it's possible. That's not the nature of the beast. That's how we'd like to think it is. But it's not that way.
And whatever it learns, we're trying to figure out. We do experiments on those models. We see what is it capable of? What is it interested in? But we study it like we study biological artifacts. You find a new species of animal on some island, we're trying to figure out what it's capable of. Does it have a poison? Does it have some interesting social structure? That's what we're doing. We're not explicitly coding up those systems. So, no, nobody knows how to encode anything like that into the existing models. Nobody's claiming to have a safety mechanism.
Rohan, you've been involved in this field for a long time. When did you first start to get concerned about AI and the safety of AI?
So my PhD work was on safety of online casinos. And at the time, poker bots just started to show up. And So the small concern we had about, are they going to collude and cheat the players? Are they going to steal cyber infrastructure? So that was the initial kind of level of concern. Obviously, nothing like what we're talking about today. But as the bots got better and better, our ability to detect them, to prevent them, was not always keeping up. And when we took it to extreme, to human level and beyond, there is no safety. We simply don't know how to make sure the systems behave.
Because the worrying thing is what you're effectively saying is that we're creating technology and we don't have we don't have the imagination in order to see what happens in the long term with this technology. We just create this technology and then it goes forth and multiplies, quite literally.
And what do people do? They ask the AI what the future will be because they can't project.
Some cases. And the concern is, if you look at social media started off as a way with Mark Zuckerberg to compare girls on campus, and yet here we are now, nearly 20 years later, and it's completely unrecognizable from what it once was.
Right. So that's a great example. It's unpredictable how we will use technology, how it will impact everything. So Facebook was meant to date pretty girls on campus, and now it destroyed democracy. Quite a surprising result. Here, it's actually much worse. We're not creating tools. We're not creating technology in a traditional sense. We're switching to agents. It doesn't take a malevolent human to abuse this technology. Technology itself has malevolent payload, and it decides what to do and why to do it.
Ah, the technology itself has its own malevolence already in it. Yeah, it makes sense. How could it not? It has absorbed everything that this species has ever done on the planet, good, the bad, and the ugly. So why not its own malevolence? He's right. All right, we'll pick this up next time and trail along with it a little bit more. Roman Yampolsky. Okay, that's it for Wednesday already. Gee, all right, tomorrow night, Thursday. Take care, talk soon, and do think about getting yourself some food. It matters. Talk to you tomorrow night.